If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Emma McKee, aka Stitch God, is a Chicago-based cross-stitch artist whose work has been featured on hip-hop heroes and basketball legends. In the first part of our needle exchange, we talk about how she came to be the Stitch God, how her work almost blew up overnight. And you can tell that there are circumstances that have led her in that direction, but it's fair to say that Emma's work is going places. And I think what's fantastic is that she has become not only a recognized artist, someone important within the Chicago creative scene, but also now becoming an inspiration to younger Chicagoans and getting involved in her community and giving a lot of her love back. This is the second part of our needle exchange. We talk about how she started off bartering her work rather than being paid for it. We talk about the trade-off of being a full-time artist. We talk about, I have a slightly indulgent conversation on my part, we talk about what it is to be a good dad, because she loves her dad. He's very influential on her. And I thought, well, I may as well find out from a daughter what a good dad can do. Furiously taking notes on that one, I tell you. And we talk about her favourite films, albums, and some really interesting facts that not a lot of people know about Emma. Emma's great. This conversation came so easily, we could have chatted for another hour and a half without worry whatsoever, because there were so many similarities, and I really hope I can get her back and have another needle exchange with her in the future. If you haven't listened to the first episode, number 51, go and find that first. Have a listen. Listen to this now, and obviously I'll be back next week with somebody from a very different part of the needlework universe, but nonetheless an amazing conversation. So I hope you'll join me for that. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting platform, and yeah, I'll see you next week. So for now, here's the Stitch God. Let's get on it. So when you started out, though, you would like using a bartering system. Let's talk about that, because that was really interesting.
I still barter.
Do you? Yeah, I was curious whether you still sometimes do it, and how it kind of works, because I can understand it, but it would be interesting to understand what you got in exchange for the barters.
Well, so the barter system was so great, you know, and I stick by all the reasons that I did it. You know, when you invite money into an artistic conversation, inherently it changes the artistic conversation. And it also changes the power dynamic, right? And so by taking the money out of it, I retained the power. You know what I mean? You can't tell me what to do, because you're lucky to be even, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But because also you're doing it for love thing. And not for money, aren't you?
Well, exactly that too. But I also was learning how to do it. You know what I mean? So it was hard for me to reconcile, okay, this is going to cost thousands of dollars of labor, and I've made this thing for you, and now could you pay me that? So I was like, that seems unrealistic, but I'm in this creative kind of here in Chicago. So I traded people stuff. So I have, at one point we were working on a collaborative mixtape called the Stitch Tape, which I still have all the sessions for, but yeah. I had just tens and twenties and thirties of songs. Production, rapping. So I would trade people for their artwork. So I have amazing visual art in my home, amazing original paintings by, you know, this whole class of Chicago creatives. And so I still do that sometimes, right? Because I will say that doing all corporate commissions all the time sometimes makes me feel like I'm straying from my path. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because like, while it's great to work with Pabst and Coca-Cola and Budweiser and all these things, like, you know, I know that Jeff Koons worked with the NBA and Hennessy were like his early artwork pieces. And I'm, you know, I don't want to lose all of my artistic whatever just making stuff for companies, you know. Mm-hmm. It's good. I'm glad that I have them as clients. But the barter system allows me to just kind of do what I want and approach my now full-time living, this thing that I just used to love. It allows me to approach it like I used to, you know what I mean? Like right now, I haven't made a jacket in a very long time. Because the music industry will break your heart. It is a hard place to be in. Mm. And so I'm making a piece for a painter friend of mine who I just love. She inspires me endlessly. And it, I mean, and also there's no timeline on it because I'm just making it for trades, you know. She'll paint me something, and then I'll have an original piece of hers, and she'll have a two-piece set from me. And that is just like, it's just nice. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about any kind of creative approval. I don't have to worry about it being seen by a bunch of people. It's not immediately going to something commercial. It is just me being able to make something for somebody that I care about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was what started it all to begin with.
Mm, yeah. And I think that trade-off is always the thing. You know, there's a fair few needle exchanges I've had along those kind of lines. You know, it's great. You need to keep the lights on somehow, and it definitely a good job will take the heat off for a long time. But yeah, if your artistic direction decides to go and flow off in a different direction, then you've got this real tension, haven't you? And you owe it to yourself to like take sabbaticals and look after your own. I was thinking as well, though, in some ways I would imagine that doing workshops is another way of topping up your creative tank just through the pleasure you can get from seeing the impact it has on other people. I always found that anyway.
No, 1000%. Like, the interesting thing about being a full-time artist is I thought I'd be spending so much more time making things. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you hear that too. Mm-hmm. And I spend about as much time making things, which is crazy. I thought it'd be so much more. And I spend so much time doing the other stuff, you know, and the other stuff being the workshops, the community work, the youth outreach, all this, you know, admin, all these kinds of things. But no, I definitely do. Like, I feel like such your typical artist, you know. I will be at my house working on something for days on end and forget to, you know, go outside and touch grass. And that can be really detrimental to your mental, you know, when you're the only person I'm looking at my work. Do I like this? Okay. Yeah. But you can kind of, I feel sometimes I have like loss of sense of self. Mm-hmm. So it's very good to be out there and doing those things. Cause it's like, oh yes, no, these are the things that are important to me. The people are really what it's all been about the entire time anyway. Mm. And it's quite easy to get caught up in the, well, America is like a terrible, scary place. So it's quite easy to get caught up in the like, oh God, I have to pay health insurance and my mortgage and all that. But yeah.
What else was I going to ask you? So how do you feel that you've evolved as a cross-stitch designer? Because obviously it's one thing, as we said, and we all do the same thing. And I did exactly the same thing, right? The first pieces I ever really made for myself, I found street art that I liked and just banged it into computer software and just stitched that stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly the same thing. Because it's like, I'm not a street artist, but I loved it. So I just found a couple of people who did abstract work that I really like, and I banged it into software and just kind of stitched that. So exactly the same thing, because I think that's what you do. You kind of learn it. But, you know, those sneaker designs that you've got for your workshops, you've got backstitch on there. You've clearly got your ideas in terms of design down. I'm interested to get you to reflect on your design journey, because it's one thing to follow a pattern. It's another thing to make a competent design.
Yes, no, that's very, well, that has been an evolution, I must say. And like, I think it's so cool that you started stitching street artists as well.
Yeah, yeah, honestly.
We're like a funny place.
We're like yin and yang, we are.
No, I know, truly. So I quickly discovered after, you know, doing all these other people's work, I was like, well, okay, this is getting big quickly. The problem here is going to come in me stitching other people's work. Mm-hmm. like I knew that was going to be an issue. As soon as Chance started wearing the stuff for tour, as soon as, you know, SZA was asking me for stuff, I was like, I can't replicate other people's artwork. And if I am going to replicate other people's artwork, they have to be in on it.
Hmm.
And I've never been a great, I don't draw very well. That's never been my thing. But I have great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do is I would have an idea and then I would find somebody who could make that base art for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd turn that into a pattern. And so now what has happened over the years is I have like a whole range of people who do contract work for me. You know, when I'm doing stuff with sports teams and I want to do a logo, I have somebody who does that stuff really beautifully. When I do my shoes, I have someone who does line drawings for me really beautifully. So it's just a matter of what am I making? What do I want it to look like? Which of these graphic artists of mine do I need to work with in this situation? You know, I have a really, I have a great guy who does my portrait stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I start with that. I mean, I think, the patterns are very complex, but I used to plug things into a software maker, mm-hmm. like a cross-stitch software thing, but it didn't give me nearly as much variety as it just didn't give me what I needed. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? The software has gotten a lot better in the last 10 years, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first was trying out the free online software 10 years ago, you know, that's what I did to make my first projects. But now I have a pattern maker. She's amazing.
Right.
She's like a soccer mom in Philadelphia. and we have been working together now for like 7 or 8 years. And yeah. So she really knows what I like. And then she's really open about iteration. So, you know, she'll come back to me with something and I'll say this needs to change. This needs to be here. This needs to be in backstitch. This needs to be, you know, whatever it is. And mm-hmm. so we'll have a couple rounds of back and forth. And then I get this like beautiful, amazing chart.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried using other folks and I have tried using other software and it just like nothing has been as good as my pattern maker. So I just stick with her, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the things, like I tell people that success has come with this because I am especially good at that part, which is understanding what my strengths and weaknesses are and figuring out how to get the best end product. You know, when I don't know how to do something, I find somebody who does it really well. And then if I like that person, then I'm going to stick with them.
Come
hell or high water. So it's been a lot of evolution over the years, but now it's good because I get to put out my, you know, original ideas and then stitch them. So they feel, and I'm sure it'll continue to evolve. Like, now even there'll be times when I don't use a pattern maker or a graphic designer at all, depending on what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So every project's different. That has been a big journey and I'm sure will continue to be.
Mm. Yeah. It's I've been in the same boat. I had to do a design once. I came up with an idea of like I think it was a guinea pig that was going to be like a luchador wrestler, and I was like, I can't draw. So I got somebody to do that for me. Then I turned it into a pattern. You know, it's the same sort of thing. It's the same thing. Like what you've said so resonates with me because I get insecure because I don't get enough time to practice drawing. So I can do enough to impress my kids, but there's that. But I also get the insecurity of then hanging out with like the best cross stitch designers on the planet who can just do this stuff. And I'm just like, well, brilliant. It's really.
Well, no, that's kind of, and I think that was one of the reasons that I wouldn't let people call me an artist for so long, especially when I was just making other people's stuff. Cause I was like, this isn't my stuff.
Mm.
I'm no artist. I'm just like, I can just make this. And then I think I got more comfortable with the title and it started being my ideas coming to fruition. Mm. But also I think it's a timing and location thing, right? Because I got really lucky in that I was using, you know, the graphic designers that I use are, you know, people who do work for all the other big, you know, Chicago clothing wear brands, all these things. You know what I mean? I had quite a good group of people to choose from and work with and continue to. I feel like I'm just surrounded by so much talent here that piece has been like a big blessing.
So let's ask that then. So how long have you lived in Chicago?
You found me in 2013. I think I moved to Chicago in 2012, so that would make it 12 years.
And how old? No, I don't want to give away your age or whatever.
I'm young and filled with joy.
You are. So you obviously, now you're 24. Amazing.
Exactly.
But it would be fair to say that you bloody love Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that, I say something incredibly dorky. I say I wasn't born here, but I was formed here.
Yeah, I've been to Chicago. It's one of two places.
You?
Yeah. I came in 2011. Hang on, did I go to Chicago before you? Holy shit.
You did,
Look
you
at
did.
That. Before it
are
was
you,
cool.
Are you the real Stitch God?
Yeah, that was me. I mentioned it in passing to some hip-hop dude. His name was like, what was it? Community Chess, the rapper or something? I can't remember.
Chance the rapper?
Yeah, that's... no, and what did I do? I went there for a week to hang out with a friend, and the main thing I remember is we went up, there's a cocktail bar on like the 97th floor of the Willis Tower, I think it is. And
it's
I remember,
room.
Yeah, and we went up there, and I was just like, particularly when the sun had gone down and all the lights were on, I was like, holy crap.
It's really impressive.
It's huge. Well, this is the thing. So there's, I did a little bit of research, and Chicago's got approximately 2.9 million people living in it. The country of Wales has got approximately 3 million people living in it. So you're nearly...
All of Wales!
Yeah, honestly, the whole country. So Chicago is nearly bigger than a whole country. But also just the scale of the place. I mean, the thing is you've blown up inside a community that is incredibly talented. You've got this big pool to be in there. So it's obviously just... I mean, what a great environment for you.
I mean, so lucky. Yeah, I mean, when I got kicked out of Canada, I was just beside myself. I couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And so the fact that I came to Chicago and it really made me, it feels like kismet, you know, like a thing that was supposed to happen. It really, you know, I've moved around a lot in my life. Chicago is the longest I've ever been anywhere. I feel the most myself here. And so I know that that means that I should be here. I mean, it's like a funny thing to not, I'm from lots of different places, but there's not places for me to go back to really. So I, you know, cause my parents have moved around so much. So Chicago is really a place that I have put down roots for myself. And it feels like really intentional work that I've done over the past decade. And so, Chicago is the kind of city that it's not going to just let you stroll in off the street and do whatever you want. I mean, it demands things of you. You know what I mean? There's amazing poetry about Chicago. It's Nelson Algren. He says, once you become a part of this particular patch, you'll never love another. Like loving a woman with a broken nose, you may well find lovelier lovelies, but you will never find a lovely so real.
Nice.
And that's right. I mean, that's Chicago, you know, and you have to love it first and then it like loves you back so fiercely, but it is not for the, it's not for the weak. But I just like, you know, you see the history everywhere. The people here are amazing. I always say that Chicago is the most American city. You know, we have all the spectacular, amazing things about America here, but we also have all of the horrible things are right here as well. So as goes Chicago, so does the rest of the country. I truly believe, you know, people think about New York as being the American city, but it's really not. That's its own thing. New York is its own thing.
Yeah.
But Chicago really is the consummate American city. It is the great American drama unfolds here. And I just love that about it. People hustle here. People work hard. It's blue collar. And I just feel like these are my people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I dig it. I like it. And it's true. You can tell that love is true and it's not. I don't know. It's really cool to see. It reminds me, I live in a town now called Crewe, and Crewe's a railway town that's really not had a lot of love over the past decade. But I kind of like it here because I've lived in quite a few places, and my oldest daughter, Flora, we're now in her, this is the fourth house she's lived in already because we moved around a little bit. But like, we went to a burger joint. It's not a big town, but we went to a burger joint and we were sitting by, and you could kind of play guess the country of the person walking past, because crew's got something like, they say there's like 100 languages within this town or something. It's wow. So diverse. It's bonkers, because it's just a very kind of that kind of town. And I kind of love that. I love that I can go to my local supermarket and sometimes be like the only white Englishman there or something, you know, and it's just, I really like that. And it's not for everybody, but me and my wife, we both like, she lives in the near the Lake District. It's very beautiful. I grew up sort of further down south. But when we drive back into crew, we're both just like, okay. You just feel like you're like settling into it.
That's the feeling.
Yeah, it's weird.
That's how you know, is when you come back. Like, whenever I fly over Chicago and I see the coast, the buildings, I'm just like, oh. It just, nothing makes me happier than coming home to Chicago. I feel, it sounds like you feel the same way.
It's weird, and I wouldn't expect it, and nobody else. Like, if you saw, because crew's not attractive at all. Don't listen, crew. I love you. But it is a woman with a broken nose sort of thing, you know?
Yes, well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, my best friend in England lives in Romford, and she is very much the same way about Romford. She's like, you know, she's not pretty, but we love her.
I went to East London University, so I spent 4 years near Barking and Dagenham in Ilford. So I know that.
There you go. It's
rough as around there. I want to talk, there's two more things I want to talk about before we get onto the big questions. I want to talk to you about your father, who you love so much. Yes. You've got his birthday tattooed on your hands. I would want to know, and this is a very selfish question. I want to know, what is it that makes a great dad? Why is your dad the best? And what can I do to be the best dad?
Oh my God, that's such a sweet question. My dad always just really let me be who I am. Supported my curiosity, and never made me feel. Well, I don't know. I feel like my parents. I feel like I was a little adult in the home. You know, there were only three of us, and both my parents have vocations. The calling to do the big thing. And so I got to watch them do that and really like follow their paths and be their own people. And that's what has made me like this. My dad is like the best. I'm trying to think of, I think specifically of when I was a teenager. My dad's a minister, and he and I had a big fascination with Judaism. And I was like, I'm going to convert to Judaism. I'm going to go to temple. And he was like, knock yourself out, Emma. You know, it's like, here in my true dad fashion, he's like, here's a book about it. And if you want to talk about it, let's talk about it. And of course I didn't end up converting to Judaism, but like, I love that my dad, the minister, was like, yeah, I want you to do what you want to do as long as you want to do things. You know, he was just happy that I was curious and inquisitive and wanted to learn. And so he always encouraged that, you know?
Yeah. I love the fact that when you got the tattoo of his birthday in your hand, you were like, this is going to really twist his melon.
Oh, he hates, he hates it. And then also my mom is like, why don't you have me on the other side?
Oh yeah, that's true.
A question, and I'm going to do it. But I don't think, I think, of course. My reasoning when I was in my 20s was that, what if I get a wedding ring? I don't know how to think.
Okay.
And now I'm just like, I don't care about that. Let me just get my mom's birthday tattooed as well. But I am like, I got that tattoo because I am so much my father's daughter. Even as I get older, I'll react to something or act a certain way, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, there's Steve McKee, there he is, wow, fully coming through.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I didn't become a dad till I was 42, and it took a while to get here, but I just so love it. And it's just I just want to be the person who no other man's going to match up to for my kids. It's really selfish.
You'll be that regardless. You just will. Like, I mean, there is nobody else like a father to a daughter. There just isn't.
No, I know. I'm enjoying it. And it's, who did I say this? I think, was this on the Danielle thing as well? I was just saying, you know that Annie song by John Denver, where it's just like, you fill up my senses and all that. And once Annie was as a baby, we used to play it because she was half named after that song, kind of. And there's just a bit where it says, like, I will drown in your laughter and I will die in your arms and stuff. And it's just like, sometimes I still sing that to the girls if they're struggling to go to sleep. But God damn it, I'm nearly crying now just talking about it, you know, because that's such a good metaphor.
No, truly, me too. It's lovely. Do we think young stitchers in the future? No.
I mean, Flora's done a bit of stitching. Annie's done a bit of stitching. Yeah, I don't know whether they'll be, I mean, we'll let them be what they want to be, you know, but at the moment it feels like Flora's probably going to, I like to think she's going to be like a vet or a researcher or work with animals. And I think Annie's just going to be a rebel, and best of luck to all Demeter.
Yeah. Best of luck to you when they're teenagers.
Honestly, I was saying this to someone the other day. I was like, you know, I'm laughing now because I've got a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. I'm like, meet me in 8 years' time when I've got a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old, and I'll just be crying all day. It'll be so good.
Well, that is why we will soak up these lovely moments.
Honestly,
now.
And I do. I really do. Cycling through the woods the other day, and I was just like, enjoy this, because one day she's
it's
just
crazy because I feel like you found me early, and that means conversely that I found you early. And I remember when your first was just born.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Flora came out, like, the magazine started in, I started working for myself as Mr. X Stitch in March 2017, and Flora came out in April 2017. You were in the second issue of the mag, so that would have been like 2018, just about, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember it all happening. How funny.
Yeah, it's bonkers. It's bonkers. So your dad's a minister, and then your mum was an opera singer.
Yes. She is an opera singer. Yes, she is. And she's British opera singer.
I was going to say, and she's British. Let's talk about Britain. Tell me what about, because I feel like you like Britain.
I love Britain.
Come on, tell me about it.
I do. Well, I love me a finger of fudge and a curly whirly, first of all.
I wish I had like a drum. What is it? There's a website called instantrimshot.com. And if you go there, it just goes boom.
Well, no, I'm half British. I have been, most of my family is in England. Mm. My grandparents were, my aunts and uncles and cousins and things, all in England. And so I go once or twice a year.
Down south.
It's just all over, really. I mean, the funny thing is the least amount of time I spend anywhere is London.
Mm.
And if I'm in London, I'm in Kew Gardens because that's where my, you know, aunt is, and, you know, so I'm out there in Richmond and Kew and not really in London at all. But, I have an aunt who's in the Midlands, mm-hmm. and I have a godfather who's in Liverpool. So we spent lots of time there.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother lived in Lewes in East Sussex.
Mm-hmm.
And when she died, she left the house to her three daughters. And so they split it up and renovated it. And so now my parents have a little place to live when they go to England. So they spend about 6 months of their time over there.
Mm, cool.
Half the year. I really love being there. It's so interesting because to all of my people in America, I'm like so European and so British. Right.
Are you like Angela Lansbury? Is this what's happening?
Right. Well, quite exactly. And also the cross stitch thing doesn't help that. But then I come to England and I'm like Yankee Doodle Dandy, demanding ice in all of my beverages, and lamenting the lack of air conditioning. So it is just like such a funny thing because here I feel quite British, and in England I feel so American.
Yeah. I think the Chicago Bulls uniform probably really adding to the illusion there as well, isn't it?
Right, right. But you Brits love the Bulls as well.
We do.
No, I just like, especially with the way that America has gone in the last 5-10 years, mm-hmm. like, you know, I feel, it's funny. There's like things that you really take for granted. Like when I'm in Lewes, I can walk around by myself and that is fine.
Mm.
That's not a thing that I like do anywhere in the United States, really, especially at night. Mm. Just like and the always like constantly looking over your shoulder. You know, you guys don't have the serious gun issues that we have. That I think is one of the scariest things. Mm. You know, my parents recently had their three of their windows shot out by a rifle in their apartment building in a nice neighborhood in Kansas City.
Ready, yeah.
Right. And, you know, I had my best friend from high school was in a mass shooting in Brooklyn 2 days ago. Like, my best friend from high school was in the Las Vegas shooting. You know, there's just that.
Yeah.
And it is, like, a very real... I mean, this is, like, the most depressing thing ever, but the leading cause for death in children in America is guns. What a crazy, crazy, crazy thing that is.
Yeah.
It's not even cancer. It's gun violence. So I just, you know, I love coming to England because I know that that's not going to be a thing that I have to worry about.
I think the leading cause of death of children in England is boredom. That's not true.
we forced them to cross stitch.
Yeah.
And now they're bored to tears. No, I mean, but so that's like, I know that sounds so crazy, but that is like a very real thing for me.
Yeah, it's scary because go on.
No, I mean, so I just come to England and my shoulders go down a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, it's bonkers that you can look at, like, as if there's a mass shooting website, isn't it, that just tracks it, and there's just more mass shootings than there are days of the year so far, whatever. It's like, and nothing changes.
Well, now the Supreme Court has rolled back... now you can have bump stocks on your guns, which means that people can shoot guns with hundreds of rounds of ammunition in a minute. It's just like, this doesn't make
well the any good thing is you've all. Got dual citizenship, haven't you, so you can always come over here.
I do, yeah. Well, yeah, so it was a lot more fun when it was an EU citizenship.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah, okay, yeah, well.
Shout out y'all.
Fingers crossed though, we've got a general election coming up soon. Fingers crossed things are going to change for the better. Yeah.
We hope. It's interesting because I talk to my British friends and, you know, there are like lamentable politics and there are lots of similar things happening over there as there are over here, which I feel like has always somewhat been the case. But we are so much more extreme than you guys.
Oh, yeah.
So our middle left is your conservative, I would say. Like, it's just very.
Yeah, I so just I said it to. Oh, God, who was I talking to? I said it to someone, I was just like, the fact that you've got a man who's been convicted of criminal things and is still a likely shoe-in for the president. You're
that's going to be our president again.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good.
But also then, I was going to say, you should also come over here. If you ever think you're going to have an appendix removed, then come over here as well.
That's the other big piece. I mean, and that's like a very real consideration. Like, people ruin their whole lives going into medical debt over here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always been my thing. It's, you know, my parents are like, keep a suitcase at the house so you can establish residency and get your healthcare taken care of in England.
Come to Crewe. You'll feel like you're in Chicago, but much smaller.
I love it.
And without the basketball.
Where is Crewe? I know the name.
Well, the thing with Crewe is it's a railway town. So it's a big intersection for lots of like cross-country railways. So a lot of time people just travel through Crewe and never come out of it. It used to be the whole town was involved in making trains and railways and all those sorts of things, you know. So it's a bit like Detroit, a bit like Chicago, like former big industrial town. Yeah. You know, that same kind of vibe, but a lot smaller.
No, as I keep talking about my bestie in Romford, she's a train person.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to talk to her about Crewe.
Yeah, honestly, she's probably been through it. Yeah. Right, let's do some tough questions now then.
Okay.
The ones, this is going to go on for another hour. Do you have a favorite album / artist?
I loved these questions. Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning because it changes all the time. But I think that my favorite album all time is probably Paul Simon's Graceland.
Nice. That's good. Do you
interesting
know what?
One, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's the first person. You're not the first person to say that on this podcast.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't tell you who it is off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure that's come up. I got it on vinyl a little while ago as well. Love it.
I have it on vinyl. My first concert ever was the Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I named my first pet, who was a hamster, after the lead singer of the Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Wow.
My hamster's name was Sabongi Zani Shabalala. So I really love that Graceland album. I mean, I grew up with a preacher and an opera singer. Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine the music that we were listening to in the home is, you know, Holst and Puccini and Elgar and you know, Gilbert and Sullivan was the fun stuff. And so when I found this, still shrink wrapped. Somebody must have given my parents Graceland because my mom lived in South Africa for a long time. So someone must have given it to them. They never listened to it. I found it. I put it on our big sound, our big speaker situation when I was little, when my parents were somewhere, and it just blew my mind. Mm. I was like, music sounds like this too? Mm. Blew
yeah.
my mind.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. And it's so joyful as well. And it's even just, straight away, like Boy in the Bubble, it just like starts off and you're like, huh? And then it's just joy. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's a great choice.
And I feel like there's nothing, I feel like we haven't had anything quite like that since.
It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, because it was so different. Like I've got Simon and Garfunkel Greatest Hits, and there's a few tunes on there that are good. Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those rare, you definitely know you're going to have a nice time just listening to it, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way about the first Bluey album, but that's because I'm a dad.
Dad's love. Hashtag dad thing.
Yeah, honestly. Moving on. Favorite film / TV show?
Ooh, okay. I don't watch these movies as much as I used to, but I think that they earn favorite just by nature of being them. But I'm a big Star Wars girl.
Okay.
Star Wars is my favorite. I mean, and then I'll say, if someone asks me for like my favorite single film, it's maybe Goodfellas.
Ah, yeah, another classic. Yeah. Yeah,
see how American I am?
You are slightly American. Slightly American.
Now I want to know yours.
Oh, favorite films? I mean, there are many, but I tell you one film that springs to mind fairly often when I think about this, because I do think about it quite a lot. A film that I will watch all the way through if I happen to see it is The Fifth Element, Bruce Willis.
Oh, I love The Fifth Element. Such That's a good so looking good. Film.
Yeah.
Didn't Jean-Paul Gaultier do some of the costumes?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And that's another, yeah.
Yeah.
For some reason, that always just springs to mind. I always just think, I could always watch that again. Yeah. I mean, TV shows particularly? Or no, we've kind of covered that, I suppose, in some ways.
No, I mean, like, I watch a lot of TV, but okay, no, my favorite TV shows is Sopranos.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Did you know that the theme song for The Sopranos by the Alabama Three was the Alabama Three were a British band, and that song was about a lady who shot her husband?
No way.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, that's so
I wish
funny.
I had the name perfect. Of the lady, but it was just a lady who one day, it was like a domestic shooting thing. Over here, quite a rare thing. I think she was being
I know that is really
really
unusual.
Like abused by her husband, and then woke up this morning, got myself a gun.
Yeah. Wow, I can't believe you taught me something about The Sopranos that I didn't know.
There you go. What was the other one? Last good book you read?
Ooh, I read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is I usually read something like terribly dry and historical, and if it's about America, usually very depressing. And then I will read a celebrity biography.
Okay.
That's how I do it. Like, mm-hmm. I'll read a book about why schools in America are the way they are.
Yeah.
And then I will read Rebel Wilson's.
Okay.
You
know what I mean? Yeah.
Something that I don't need to hold on to any of the information, like something that's just easy. But my favorite book of all time is probably the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was one of those that just like busted my brain wide open. I read it as like a 17-year-old, and I've read it several times since then. but it was just, you know, I've always had an inkling that I have not been, you know, American school students or students. I just thought that I had not gotten the whole picture,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so when I read the autobiography of Malcolm X, I was like, oh no, I definitely haven't.
Mm.
There's so much in my education that I'm missing.
Mm.
And so that's when I set about educating myself more than I was getting in school. Cause I was like, the American government seems funky to me. I don't know. I don't know, but we're not learning anything about that. So I need to know more. Well, quiet. I was like, yes, no. So I think that it's my favorite just by virtue of, opening up my mind. And then this is a layered question for me because I love reading,
mm-hmm.
but there's a book that I give people when they come to Chicago. And it's that little piece that I gave you. It's a poetry book by Nelson Algren. It's called City on the Make.
Right.
And it is just a long form poem about Chicago that I think is just really, really beautiful. Mm. So those would be my favorites.
We'll have to cross stitch that on the side of a massive fence sometime.
Well, that's actually not a bad idea.
Mm. It's a few lines of it in places, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And Chicagoans would love that too, I'm sure.
Yeah. Get the funding. I'll come over and help you. That'd be a laugh.
Okay.
I was going to actually ask you as well, do you have a favorite hip hop album?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Probably The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, mm-hmm. or Jay-Z's Blueprint. Like, there's so many Jay-Z albums that I love. It's hard to pick my favorite one, but The Blueprint maybe. Yeah, but Lauryn Hill would be my favorite.
Okay, I'm pleased to say I've got that on vinyl as well.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Yeah, it's a really good one.
It's actually more than my wife's favorites as well. So she's got surprisingly bad taste in music. Well, no, I mean, and that, I say that knowing she doesn't listen to the show.
No. No, that makes sense to me. The Miseducation is the reason that it's probably my favorite hip hop album is because it's grown with me for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had that music for like 30 years. And it has meant something different to me at every life stage.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there's wisdom and learnings from it at every stage of my life. And I just, there's not much music that does that, really.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if I've got, there's quite a few hip hop bands that I like. Is it a hip hop band?
You could say, I mean, yeah.
Sound like an old one. But groups? No, if I want to, if I'm feeling in the mood for it, I'll usually, The Love Below off of Speaker Box and The Love Below.
Oh, it's such a good one. Mm. Such a good pick. I mean, I also like some of your Brits too. I love Skepta. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of your grime music.
Oh, and then Blooming, I love that stuff. And Scissors headline at Glastonbury, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
That's pretty dope.
When is Glastonbury?
Next month, I think, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's getting to get you in. She's about like, do you remember I made that thing for you?
Well, I'm trying to, I made her three things, actually. It was a whole thing. She's one of the only people that I have selfies with because I get really, again, we were talking about like the not wanting to make people uncomfortable. So I'm never like, hey, can we take a picture?
Mm.
But SZA always makes you take a picture. Mm. SZA's like, come on.
That's kind of cool.
So she's like the only person I have any pictures with. But no, because I'm coming over in August.
Aye.
And people keep telling me that August in England is kind of quiet. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with myself.
Well, you should come to Crewe.
I think I'll miss Glastonbury, though.
On the way to Liverpool.
On the way to Liverpool.
Because I'm only like, that's the thing, I'm like 40 minutes from Manchester and about an hour from Liverpool.
So okay.
Quite well placed.
That helps me.
What is...
I like Manchester.
Yeah, Manchester's groovy. I'm trying to get a thing going on here in Crewe, though. We don't have an art gallery or anything. So I'm like, right, we're going to fix that.
Well, then you're there for a reason then, huh?
I am, definitely. What is an interesting fact about Emma McKee that not a lot of people know?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I've lived so many lifetimes. Okay, well, I'll give you two. I was supposed to go to school to sing opera.
Oh.
And this next little piece of information has some context. I was asked to do a podcast like a decade ago, and the whole premise of the podcast was you couldn't talk about the things that you're known for. So I couldn't talk about sports, fashion, embroidery. So it's like, what do I know the most about after that? I ended up doing an hour-long podcast about the history of North Korea.
Okay.
Because I know a lot about the Hermit Kingdom. I think I've probably read every English language book that there is on the topic. Yeah. So that is like a weird thing that most people don't know is that I have a lot of very specific knowledge about North Korea.
So what are the most interesting things that we don't know about North Korea?
Well, I mean, there's just like a ton of interesting stuff about North Korea. I mostly am fascinated by it because I'm fascinated by what people do at the very ends of the ends of their humanity, like the lengths that they'll go to, you know what I mean? And North Korea is a fascinating place, just the way that people have been socialized and kept away from the rest of the world, you know? There's lots of weird stuff. Most of it is really, really depressing. You know, they have just the internal system of labor camps they have going on. They have like 300,000 of their own people working in labor camps. You know, it's just like, it's crazy. People don't realize how like violent and extreme it is over there. Mm. And it is. And I think the thing that I was really fascinated with was the propaganda machine of North Korea. You know, it seems so ridiculous and over the top or whatever, but we have the same shit running on in America. You know what I mean? Our propaganda machine is pumping it out just like they are. We just cannot see it because it does not seem outlandish to us because we're living in it. So yeah. So I I make a very wild parallel between North America and the United States, but I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by how people react to that propaganda, why it's made, the longevity of the isolation. Yeah, it's just a really fascinating place. It feels like the end of the earth.
Mm. You know that analogy of like how you boil a frog? Like you boil a frog by slowly turning the heat up because otherwise it jumps out. Mm-hmm. And it's like a lot of our countries are boiling us, but it's like North Korea's just doing it in quite a smaller pan. Like they've really...
Yeah, well, and just making sure we don't see it, you know?
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. Human beings are fascinating. Mm.
I do want to dial back to the opera singer thing because there was a girl who was in my year at school called Rachel Nichols, who's a professional opera singer. And I know that only now in her 40s is she hitting her stride because her voice is there. So what happened to you then?
Yeah.
Started smoking.
Oh, I... well, I smoke a lot of weed. But the reason that I don't... I have always had a voice, but I get butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like performing. I get up in front of people and I start to sing and I just feel like quivery inside and it's just wildly uncomfortable. And so I haven't actually enjoyed singing all that much because all of it is for performance. So I don't really know what I'd sound like anymore. I don't really sing very much. It's just, you know, I leave that to my mom. She loves that.
I think
it's just not.
Respectfully, I think you need to go and find a karaoke bar where you don't know anybody and fucking knock their socks off.
Let her rip.
Honestly, let her rip. Jesus, can you imagine? Just any song. Just like Celine Dion, I Will Always Love You, and you break every fucking beer glass in the room. Excuse my French.
It's funny. I can tell when I'm in a really good mood because then I'll just be singing. Mm-hmm. I don't know when it happens. It just kind of... Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I must be really happy if I'm just singing out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy the performance aspect of it at all.
Mm.
And it made me really anxious. And so it just like wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, I could see, you know, I grew up in a home with my mother is the diva.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an incredible voice. And she loves getting up on stage. She feels very connected to people. And I see that connection with her. And I just don't have it.
Mm. Your performance is a different kind of thing.
Well, and also I was unaware that being a cross stitcher would put me straight back in front of, you know, I thought because I was behind the art, I'd never have to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're on Chicago Today.
Right. Exactly.
That was probably one of your like highest precious gigs, wasn't it? Like the local Chicago Today.
Oh, I love being, the local news is so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my thing. I really love it. But, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I've had several different careers. You know, I've been a DJ and I've sung and I've done video production and who knows, but lots of stuff.
So what's next?
But Cross Stitch is my favorite.
Like
what's next?
Have you got anything down the pipeline you can talk about?
Well, yeah, I'm always working on a million things. But basically I think I said it at the very top, like I'm obsessed with scale.
Mm.
And so I'm like, I'm really trying to figure out the big, large scale piece. Mm. You know, I know I've found so far in my travels, I think there's three of us that do large scale cross stitch. There's a woman in Spain.
Oh yeah.
And she does some Raquel things in Rodrigo. England. Have you seen her?
Yep. She's been in the
mag. Is that her name? Yeah. I only know the handle.
Yeah. It was with an N, isn't it? I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah. But it's beautiful, amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's a woman who lives in one of those countries that has lots of vowels all jammed together, Zs and things, which is a terrible way. But she does like this industrial stuff. She stitches on like tanks and oil barrels.
Severia.
And... Yes.
Yeah. So I've exhibited her work in the past. Come on.
Yeah.
Lithuania.
Yeah. You know. That was way easier than it
was, wasn't it?
I thought it was someplace way more complicated. My bad. Sorry, Lithuanians. Yeah. All of you Lithuanians tuned in. But you know, so there's not that many of us that do that.
Mm.
And so I want to do more of it. I'm figuring out how to get paid to do more of it. I'm working on like big interiors projects. It's basically just figuring out how do I get somebody to give me money to do massive cross stitches? That's basically where I'm at. Yeah. And there'll always be, you know, I'm always kind of lightly working on things with basketball players or big, you know, Jordan Brand, Wilson, things like that. So I've always kind of got things on the go. But right now I'm really focusing on interiors and large scale.
Amazing. Hey, Emma. Thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Oh, thanks for having me on your needle exchange, Jamie.
It's been so good. Right.
I've had a great, you really woke me up. And it's not even 9 a.m. for me yet.
That's impressive. I need definitely. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments, or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.